honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to learn this Memorial Day weekend about a new memorial in the works at the Veterans Home of California in Fresno. There's a very special way you can support that effort, and we'll get back to Julie Cusseter in a moment to make that clear. You can also find more information online at hometownheroesradio.com. But let's explore the memories of another name that will end up etched on that memorial, another Purple Heart Marine who lived out his final days at that special facility. Max Roof's injuries came in the Battle of Iwo Jima.
Several thousand was killed in Iwo, and I wasn't one of them. But I had eventually four back operations, hip replacement, and a lot of internal injuries and so forth, but I came out fairly good.
I want to hear the rest of this story, but I do want to ask you about Mount Suribachi and that indelible image, that Rosenthal photo of the group hoisting that flag. That photo is on the back of your business card. When you look at that photo now, when you look at the Marine Corps statue at Arlington National Cemetery there that honors those men and everyone who fought there, what do you think of when you see that image?
One thing, I feel proud. I really do. And I'm so proud that I went into the Marines. Even though I got banged up pretty bad, to me, I was proud, and I still am.
And I don't blame you. And of course, if anyone's been to that beautiful statue near Washington, D.C., that brings that photograph to life in a 3D sense, they've seen the quote on the side from Admiral Nimitz that says, "Among the Marines in the Pacific, uncommon valor was a common virtue." Is that something that means something to you? Do you believe that to be true? Is that what you saw in the guys that you served with?
I have to say yes. In the Marines, good people now that I love dearly, who's Lieutenant Colonel and John Lockie, for example, and just guys that are just so super in every way and so thoughtful and so helpful in watching him and handle other Marines that need help in the way of mentally particularly. So I just am thrilled that I'm part of that. I'm way under their caliber, I'm telling you, but they really make me proud.
Are you saying once a Marine, always a Marine? Is that what I hear?
That's what you heard, sir. That's exactly correct.
Well, let's talk about this injury, because I know we've alluded to it a few times. But if you can, share with our listeners the details of what happened to you, what you were doing, where you got hit, what it felt like. Walk me through that if you can. What were you doing at that time?
I was fighting with a rifle, guys coming in like mad, Marines, and fighting Marines, I should say, but guys that were the Japanese, but also more Marines were coming in trying to protect. Everybody was there too. And when I got hit, the first time I got hit, or on Net Island, I almost mentally lost it. I just knew that I was hurt bad, but I kept kind of fighting, but not really. I kind of figured out what do I do next? Where do I go? And how do I get out of here? But I couldn't and didn't until they picked me up in a blanket and got me out.
So it was shrapnel from a landmine and fragments of a hand grenade that got you at the same time?
It was mostly hand grenades that got hit me, that got me badly fouled up.
Where did it get you?
Pretty much all over in my body and so forth. But again, I got out, you know, I went immediately to the hospital, and then to the ship out to the hospital. Then immediately flew me on to Guam, and I was in Guam hospital for several months before I got back to Hawaii, and then they shipped me on then to San Francisco and then home.
Well, I'm sorry for all these questions about the same thing, but when you say that it took you several months to recover, I think we can all tell these were pretty serious injuries, and this hit your front, not your back? I mean, did you get it in the face, the shoulders? Where did it all go?
I can't answer that intelligently. I was bleeding all over, but I didn't get any scars, you know, as bad as you have. No, I'm just teasing. I am teasing.
I haven't looked in a mirror today.
No, I really just was. I can't answer that really intelligently anymore. I'm just in regard to where I got hit on the back very seriously, and that's where I had four back operations.
Were you? I mean, I know that when there's an explosion, when there's shrapnel, sometimes you can be blinded temporarily.
That was exactly correct. I did go blind. Matter of fact, the operator on my eyes when they flew me to Guam, and I couldn't see for about 2 weeks, and then they operated on three different times. The doctor told me later, and so eyes was a bad thing in my face and so forth. But you wouldn't take anything very large to knock your eye out, you know.
So. This was a pretty big deal. I mean, you were hit pretty hard. Did you lose consciousness? Were you aware of what was going on, or were you completely out of it?
I would have to say I was aware of it. I wasn't completely out of it. I was hurting pretty bad. I wasn't crying some of them were, and I wasn't. Didn't mean that's bad. I just wasn't. I was just hurting But I made it through.
And you couldn't evacuate yourself. You couldn't move yourself out of there. You had to wait for a corpsman to come help you?
No, I had to wait for almost an hour for some. They were picking other people up as well. And I was in the group where a lot of them were dead completely in the same area. And the two guys would pick us up, take us on over to the next little spot, and then somebody else would take over, and then they would come back and try to get somebody else, and did get somebody else.
Yeah, because, I mean, the battle's still raging on. It's not like they say, time out, we need to get some guys out of here. Yeah. You have to wait for the guys that are actually walking to get you out. That seems like a very helpless situation to me. When you know you're hurt, you know you're bleeding, you can't move yourself, you're waiting for an hour. What kept you focused on surviving in that hour? That's probably one of the longest hours of your life, I would imagine.
It was pretty severe. I'll have to admit that I could handle it and did handle it without any. It wasn't anybody's fault. It wasn't our fault that in the way of I couldn't. They couldn't get to me, you know. But it was hurting so bad that I'm not even sure I was going to make it, frankly.
That was going to be my question. Did you think that you were going to die? And when that thought comes in your head, it seems like a lot of times it's downhill from there. That's not a thought that you want to go through your head. But you wondered if you'd make it.
Yeah, actually, that's correct. I didn't think I would, and I was 18 years old, or 19 at this point. So I haven't lived very long yet. But I didn't feel that. I just knew that I'd make it somehow or another. But if I didn't, I didn't. And that was kind of my philosophy a little bit too, beaming back then.
When you're in a situation like that, with so many casualties as there were on that island in particular. Sometimes stretchers can be in high demand, and they're not always there when you need them. So they didn't have a stretcher to carry you out, and they actually put you in a body bag.
A body bag's what it was, and there were too many guys having need to help, you know. So I don't even see a stretcher now. And looking back, all I seen was body bags. Guys picking up in bag bags. There'd be two guys, one in front, one back, and then get us in and go.
So they took you to Guam, and you said months of recovery. It seems like that would be a challenging time to you, too. What do you remember about that time period and the challenges that you faced just to be able to function again?
Yeah, that was tough. I have to admit that because I really was hurting all over, not just my eyes, but my whole body. For a long, long time, I couldn't walk, and it was miserable. I got to say that. And then when I couldn't talk either. I'm not talking very good now, I admit that. but then I was really, I stuttered just 100% almost. You couldn't even understand me. And why I could go out and get a job and start my own business to talk to people on how to do this, I mean, talk about even whitewashing, you know, because but I got it done.
When you think back of that time after you were injured, the long recovery, and then trying to get yourself back into life, was there one thing that really motivated you or picked you up or kept you moving forward?
Sure was one thing, and this sounds kind of goofy, but I did not want to be poor. That was the big thing. As I mentioned to you, my folks were just lovely, 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 but because they lost all their money in back in the 30s in the Depression, and then they never recovered, really. And so I never experienced anything except I just didn't want to be just poor. I just had to make that was the main thing that made me go forward and I have to say be successful, and we were. And with 6 children and a beautiful wife, I was successful all over.
The late Max Roof, another of the more than 400 names that will be honored on the soon-to-be-unveiled memorial at the Veterans Home of California in Fresno. But in order for that project to be completed in time for the home's 10th anniversary in October, some more funds need to be raised. And there's a really meaningful and personal way you can help with that, as we hear from Julie Cusseter.
As I mentioned before, the majority of the funds for this project have been provided to us through appropriation funding and also through a group of local Rotary clubs. They were the original seed money for this project. So after we got the Rotary money, we knew we needed more. We were able to get the appropriation funding. So now we're sort of at the home stretch. And we were trying to figure out how we were going to fill in the gap. First thing that I've been doing is communicating to all these families of all the people who passed away. I first send them letters letting them know that we were doing this project, and then I'd follow it up with a letter letting them know if they were able to make a donation of $100, that would help pay for the engraving of their loved one's name, the year of birth, year of death, and the branch of military they served in. Another thing I discovered as I was doing this, there were a lot of names on this list, and the 400 odd names that I've been looking at, they had nobody. They might have had a neighbor or a friend or a conservator who was overseeing their affairs. I thought, well, wouldn't it be nice if we reached out to the community and let them adopt a vet, so to speak? So I call this project, the side project, Remember a Vet, where you or anyone, a member of the community, can sponsor the $100 to cover the engraving of this veteran's name, year of birth, year of death, and branch of military. And when you make that donation, I will send you a thank you letter, and it'll have a name of that veteran that you're supporting. And we want you to come to the unveiling of this project, and we want you to see that person's name on the wall so you can remember that person. So that's why we're calling it Remember a Vet. I sort of likened it to the Vietnam Wall. I went there years and years and years ago, and I remember seeing my friend sketching his great uncle's name, getting with a white piece of paper and a pencil. Well, there will be hundreds of families here doing the exact same thing, remembering their loved one. And here you are now remembering somebody who hasn't really been remembered by anybody. So what we're asking people to do, give me a call. My number is 559-493-4239. Give me a call and I'll give you information on how you can remember a vet.
I have that phone number and the rest of the information on this new memorial posted for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And I know many of you will be taking that initiative to remember a vet like those 3 whose memories we revisited today. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that on Memorial Day and every day, freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.